The risk story today is one I want to spend some real time on because it reframes a recent debate in a way that the HN community has clearly found compelling. 531 points and 276 comments for a response post is substantial. The backstory. There was a recent article arguing that RISC-V's design decisions were flawed, specifically that the architecture's modular extension system creates fragmentation that makes it difficult to write software that runs reliably across different RISC-V implementations. The argument was essentially that RISC-V should have known better and that the fragmentation problem was foreseeable.
And the response, written by an engineer identifying themselves as working in the developing world context, essentially says, "The criticism is technically accurate, but economically privileged. The modular extension system isn't a bug for developing world hardware manufacturers. It's a feature. It allows you to implement only the extensions your specific use case requires, which dramatically reduces silicon area and cost. A RISC-V chip for a water quality monitoring sensor in rural infrastructure doesn't need floating point extensions. A chip for a low-power agricultural sensor doesn't need vector processing. The fragmentation that frustrates a developer writing cross-platform code is the flexibility that makes the architecture economically viable for constrained hardware budgets."
This is an argument that recurs in technology debates with some regularity. A design decision looks wrong when evaluated against the priorities of wealthy markets, and looks correct when evaluated against the priorities of cost-constrained markets. The RISC-V Foundation's explicit mission includes global technology independence, specifically reducing developing world dependence on x86 and ARM architectures that are controlled by US companies.
The geopolitical dimension is real and significant. If your country is facing technology export restrictions, and we've seen aggressive use of export controls in chip technology over the past several years, having an open source instruction set architecture that no single country controls is strategically meaningful. The fragmentation cost is a real cost. The cost of strategic dependence on architectures you don't control is also a real cost. The response piece argues that critics of RISC-V are implicitly assuming the first cost is more important, and challenges that assumption.
The HN comments include engineers from multiple countries outside the US and Europe who are validating the third world engineers' framing from their own experience. It's one of those threads that adds genuinely useful empirical grounding to what could otherwise be an abstract architectural debate.
The Reticulum Decentralized Mesh Network is another story about infrastructure independence, though in a different register. Reticulum is a networking stack designed to work over any transport layer, radio, serial connections, TCP or IP, LoRa, with cryptographic identity built in from the ground up, no central infrastructure required. The use case that keeps coming up in the HN thread is connectivity in environments where conventional internet infrastructure is either unavailable or untrustworthy.
The Qcaller scandal is a different kind of story, and honestly a troubling one. The piece from Andrew Gelman's statistical modeling blog covers a device called the Qcaller, marketed to athletes as reducing concussion risk by applying slight pressure to neck veins, theoretically increasing cerebral blood volume and providing a protective effect. The device was commercially deployed, endorsed by various sports programs, and the scientific evidence for the mechanism is, to be charitable, thin.
Gelman's post is calling for more coverage of what he characterizes as science-adjacent medical scams in sports medicine. The Qcaller isn't a pure fabrication. There's a theoretical mechanism that sounds plausible, and there have been some studies. But the studies have methodological problems. The effect sizes are small, and the commercial deployment ran far ahead of the evidence base. Athletes are buying this device to protect their brains based on claims that aren't robustly validated.
The comment count is low, 12 comments, score of 28, which probably reflects how niche the story is. But the underlying issue Gelman is raising is important. Science-adjacent health products can cause harm not just directly, but by displacing safer alternatives. An athlete who believes the Qcaller is protecting them may take risks they otherwise wouldn't.
The mysterious syndrome destroying endurance athletes' story is related in spirit a piece from Outside Online about a condition affecting endurance athletes that doesn't have a clear diagnosis or established treatment, leaving people whose athletic performance and daily function are significantly impaired without good medical guidance. The HN thread is small, but the comments include several people with personal experience of similar symptoms, which is the kind of aggregated patient experience that can sometimes surface useful signals even without formal research.
Both of these stories point to gaps in sports medicine evidence and the real human cost of those gaps, which is worth acknowledging even if neither story has a clean resolution.
Now, there's a claim we've been implicitly endorsing throughout this episode that I think deserves some scrutiny. We've talked about RISC-V's global adoption as essentially inevitable given the strategic and economic arguments in its favor. The HN community has largely treated the Third World Engineer's response as a definitive reframing. But what if we're wrong about that consensus?
Walk me through the strongest counterargument.
The strongest counterargument starts with the fragmentation problem being worse than the response piece acknowledges. Software ecosystems are not linear. They exhibit strong network effects. If RISC-V implementations are sufficiently fragmented that developers can't write portable software, then the ecosystem never reaches the density of tooling, libraries, and developer familiarity that makes an architecture genuinely competitive. ARM succeeded not just because the architecture was good, but because the software ecosystem was cohesive enough that you could hire developers who knew it. A fragmented RISC-V could have excellent individual chips and a persistently thin software layer.
The assumption being challenged, in other words, is that architectural flexibility and ecosystem cohesion can coexist at scale. The counterargument says they can't, that eventually you have to pick one, and the architectures that have won historically picked cohesion.
And the "if we're wrong" signal to watch for is actually pretty concrete. Watch the compiler toolchain support over the next 2 years. If GCC and LLVM develop robust profiles that make it easy to target specific RISC-V extension subsets without sacrificing portability, the fragmentation problem is manageable. If the compiler tools remain complex and extension-specific, the ecosystem fragmentation will compound. The toolchain trajectory is a leading indicator for whether the optimistic RISC-V thesis holds.
That's a more useful frame than just watching adoption numbers, because adoption numbers lag toolchain quality by several years.
Exactly. Watch the compiler, not the shipping volumes.